you know, making movies is hard.
Making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Brussell, the founding host of the podcast, and I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker, and my first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital, DVD, Tubi, and Amazon Prime.
I'm Liz Manischel. I'm a writer, director, producer who has directed two features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm currently in pre-production of my third feature, Best Friends Forever. I'm a producer's rep, and I used to manage Sundance's Creative Distribution Initiative.
This week, we welcome writer-director Travis Burgess on the show to talk about writing and directing his first feature film, Hayseed, and how he made a whodunit on a budget, which is awesome, and also rhymes. After that, we play another round of You're the Expert. But first, Liz, how are you doing today?
Oh, crap. I didn't write a thing that I was supposed to talk about. Damn it. I'm sick. I guess that's noteworthy. Finally got enough sleep that my body let me be sick. So that's an achievement.
Wow.
Yes. Congratulations to me. My body's like, oh, you're not dying. We're now going to let you get sick. So that's happening. We got our first pass from an actress last week.
Oh.
And we are out to three total actresses for three roles right now. So waiting to hear back for that for Best Friends Forever. And I'm meeting with Kickstarter tomorrow to talk about our crowdfunding campaign and trying to decide whether to keep on going with the Patreon or not. So those are the questions that are in front of us, the big question marks. And then like the other question is like, if we don't shoot the summer because we don't have the money in hand by then, am I going to be taking my child out of school or not? Is the other question mark in front of me. So yeah, that's what's going on here.
Well, wait, so taking the child out of school so you can save money to make the movie or to because so you'll have time?
Oh, we're public school. We don't pay for school.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. Good on you.
It's because LAUSD, Los Angeles Unified School District, has very short days. It would be very disruptive for me and Sean, who are going to be a major part of putting this film together, to figure out pickup for him. And so the question is, like, can we hire someone who's going to pick up our child and take care of him? Or are we going to have to take our child out for 2 to 3 weeks? And get a studio teacher or, I mean, like, I just have no idea to drop him off with a relative. Don't know what to do that could be the least disruptive. You know, I talked to you and I, we both talked to a bunch of filmmakers and it's like, we usually hear stories where the director just like goes out of town and then just leaves their family. And you and I have both have talked about how that's not ideal for us.
Yes.
And yeah. So how do we build a model where I get to see my children and I'm still trying to figure that out because LAUSD, if you miss more than 7 days, like total, they contact the state. If I'm reading the documentation, right, they contact the state and they start reporting these absences and they start worrying about like CPS concerns. Wow. They start worrying about like, yeah, they start digging. And I also don't know if the teacher is going to be okay with my son missing like 15 days of school.
Wow.
Right. So
even
in kindergarten.
That's crazy. Yeah. So Sean's going to be a big part of the movie. So is he going to be on set with you every day? So like, he's not going to be there to help watch your children while you're directing the movie?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, like he's been on set of every other thing we've done, but we didn't have any kids. For the last two shorts, we had our son, but they were shorts. And we were able to have a babysitter, but we can't afford a babysitter for like 15 to 20 days. So we have to figure that out. I mean, I have no idea, Arik. Like literally, I have no concept of what we're going to do. Mm. I just keep on researching to make myself feel better. But when it comes to like a real head, I don't know which direction I'm going to go here. And I think probably the best thing is to not disrupt my son's life, you know, for a movie. And so if that means Sean is not going to be on set every day, that's probably what we're going to do.
Yeah, I was thinking about it for my movie that I want to make in the future. And I was like, yeah, I'll just be in town shooting. So then I'll come home for bedtime. And I'm like, well, what if it's a night shoot? Do I come home? How can I do that? You know, and I was just thinking about it. And it's like, oh, maybe my mom has to come, you know, and just be there for the weekend. But like the way I'm doing this movie, I'm doing it like more of a new kind of alternate model that you've talked about before, where it's like
blocks shooting in blocks.
I
want to
do the
blocks.
I want to do the 4 day block. So it's like, or a 3 day block, even 4 or 3 day. I'm not sure. So like, it would be like, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Thursday, or yeah, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, something like that, you know, where it would be like just a little contained block, and then, you know, shooting in my town. So then hopefully they're not all night shoots. So then I can actually be home in time to put the kids to bed with my wife. Cause like, I know that's like the big struggle right now. It's like, I basically like leaving her alone to put two kids to bed at this time in their lives is impossible almost. She did it like twice, but like that was when Benny was really young. And now that he's older, I think it's just getting harder and harder. So yeah, it's like, I can't really do anything unless we have like my mom in town, because you know, like I have to be there for bedtime. So I'm meeting with my friends later this week, and I'm like, yeah, I can meet up at 8 or 8:30, you know, so no dinner, but just drinks. And they're like, we want to see you a lot more. I'm like, well, I don't know. There's no solution besides my mom coming, and she was just here last weekend. So that's not going to work.
Yeah. It's an impossible arrangement, right?
It's tough. Yeah. So the movies, it's just hard. I can't imagine trying to do a full movie, because you're going to do it in the traditional way, right? You're going to shoot like 3 weeks in a row or something.
That's the plan. And I think, you know, if we get rejected from every single talent offer we send out, which I really hope doesn't happen, but if we do, then we're making the movie with friends and family in the way and in the model that we want to make. I think we... are making it in the traditional way because we feel intimidated by being like, we're low budget, we're reaching out to well-known names and faces, and then we're asking them to spread their work out among several months. Like, I think that's like way too many barriers to get a yes from them.
Right.
So if we're in this scenario with name cast, I don't think I can be as novel in our approach as I want to be.
Yeah, that's sort of like the other thing about my movie is that there's a lot of roles that are contained that could be done in like 3 or 4 days, you know. Yeah. So like I'm trying to like think about, okay, well, what actor can we have come out for this 3-day weekend or this 4-day weekend or this 3-day weekend, and then like just have it be that, and then the main cast is all locals, you know, the ones that are, that go through all the different spots, but then like the ones who are just like for a few days, they can be like the names, you know.
Yeah, mine's an ensemble piece and it's all at night. It's really like a super fun challenge. But I was talking to a DP the other day and we were talking about Day for a Night, and some DPs are so against Day for a Night. Yeah. But this DP was like, actually, my crew would be a lot happier to do Day for a Night than do night shoots all the time. And it's like, well, that's a great point. Maybe that is what we do.
Interior Day for Night is really a beautiful thing. And I've done that a lot on my projects. Yeah. Like almost most of the alternate is Day for Night, because we had sets and we had interior locations for most of it. And there's only a little bit that we shot at night interior. And one of the ones, we had this huge scene scheduled to be a night shoot, and then the police came. I don't know if you remember the story. And so that we had to shut down early, and then we moved that scene to the next morning. We had it all lit up, and then we did it Day for Night, and you cannot tell. It looks so good in the movie. You would never know that was shot in the daytime. And it's like, because my team rocks, and they were just able to, you know, like black out the windows and, you know, add some lighting, some moonlight, like basically they like made boxes around the windows and they had lights within the boxes. And then that was the moonlight. It was just really great. So I don't know. Kudos to lighting teams. They're amazing. But yeah, I'm so excited for you to make this movie, Liz, I can like do what you see, what you do with your children and how you figure this out, and then copy it for me.
Yeah.
Or like, if it doesn't work out, then like, okay, that didn't
work.
Do
the opposite.
So try this. Yeah, this is very exciting. The one thing I wanted to say also about what you'd said is like the getting the no, people feel like, oh, that's so sad, you got to know, but it's actually very helpful because you need that no to move on to the next person. Yeah. And so like the quicker you get your no's, it's like almost better, because like sometimes they'll string you out like 2 or 3 weeks and you won't get an answer. But like you can get a no within a week. It's like, all right, now we can move on to the next person and like, you know, get our next no or potentially a yes. Was the person you got a no from, was it a heart-wrenching thing, or was it like you kind of expected to get a no? Like, where was it in the land?
They were a new love. They weren't a long-term love. They were someone that I recently fell in love with, so it wasn't as heartbreaking. I'm
nice.
Very, very picky with casting. I try to act like I think it's obvious I'm a high maintenance person, but I try to create a facade of low maintenance in a film crew, but it's like casting, I don't think it's possible for me to even like pretend. Like I'm so picky. So it just,
oh,
I took
funny.
A weekend to get over it. And then, you know, a new idea emerged that I'm equally excited about, if not more.
Ooh, I love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
What's going on for you?
Really quickly.
Yeah.
We did a film event in Vallejo on Saturday, which was super fun. Margaret Kerrigan, previous guest of the show, of the FX company Pandora FX, threw this open house on in her facility, which is in Vallejo, like 6 minutes from my house. So that's kind of amazing. It was like an old tattoo parlor that she turned into a makeup effects studio. So like the booths that were the tattoo parlor are now like offices where they like each, like they have an artist like do work inside this little, like, you know, what used to be a tattoo parlor. Then they have a big open space where you can do bigger builds and stuff,
cool.
Which is really fun. But yeah, the place was packed. I mean, at least 50 people there. It was crazy. And so it was me, my director, Sean McCarthy, and then Margaret, of course. And then there was two local Vallejo producers and actors. Priscilla, I can't remember her last name right now. Oh my gosh, I feel like it's so terrible. And then Karen Southall. These two wonderful actors who are also producers. And there was a really interesting story, Liz, because they both were actors for a long time. And then one started to produce in like 2022. And then one started producing in 2023. So they're like brand new producers, but they're like long time actors. Yeah, it was just really great to meet them. And they were both really excited. I told them about my movie idea. And they're like, you want to shoot a movie in Vallejo? Hell yeah, let's do this. And they're very excited. And one of them, Karen, is working on a sci-fi movie right now that like they did a proof of concept for, and they want to raise money to do a feature version. And so she wants to, we're going to talk about like, you know, can share my knowledge of how to do that, you know, but it's all female and non-binary cast and crew for that movie. So it's a very cool project. And I kind of feel like I feel like they should do well, you know, and the teaser trailer is really cool. They shot on the SS Hornet, which is a humongous old Navy ship that's in Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
They got permission to shoot there and they shot their teaser there, and it's a space movie. So it's like they shot on this old ship and then they put space backgrounds like through the windows and stuff, and it looks so cool.
That's really cool. It looks
so cool. Yeah, I just can't wait to see what they do with that. But I really hope they can raise the money and make it happen. But I feel like they should be able to. But, you know, I feel like their approach was going to big companies. And like, and they're like, oh yeah, it's budget cuts and cutbacks and it's a tough time. I was like, yeah, it's going to be a hard road to go to a big company to get any money.
Yeah.
But you got to find like individual angel investors. Like that has to be the way that you do it. And so, you know, I don't think they really have a lot of like, it's just like all of us. It's really hard to find those people that I was going to try to like help how I can to like see what they can do. Yeah, so that was really fun. Very inspiring. Really. And a couple of podcast listeners came out. Gosh, this guy came from Sebastopol.
Who?
Gosh, I want to say his name was Bill, but maybe I'm getting that wrong. And I really apologize to a listener who came from Sebastopol. He's a video game animator. I remember all the details from our conversation. I still remember his name. And he was really nice. And yeah, he does video game animation, and he works on some really cool stuff, like on the new South Park game that's just about to come out. And then he's working on, I can't remember what the other one he said, but I had heard of it. I was like, man, this is awesome. Like, dude, like you sound like have a really cool job. And he like works remotely, and like his company is like spread out all across the country. Yeah, that was really neat. And he's like getting into filmmaking. So I was like, dude, so cool to meet you. But I didn't really get a chance to talk to many people because we did this panel thing and it lasted forever. Like it was supposed to end at like 2 or 2:30, and we were supposed to have like 2 hours or something for like talking. And then it ended at 4. And then I had to leave at like 3. I was supposed to leave at 3:30. And so then I ended up leaving at like 4:20, but like talking to a few people. But yeah, I don't know. It was really cool. So I hope anyone who was there, who listened to us talk, if you're hearing this now, if you're listening to later, please reach out. I'd love to continue the conversation and get to chat with you people. You're all really wonderful artists and filmmakers, actors, less directors than I expected. It was mostly actors and special effects makeup people. That makes sense because that's like what, you know, Pandora does. But yeah, a lot of actors, not very many DPs, only a couple producers. But yeah, a lot, you know, it was a really cool group of people, and I was really happy to be a part of that event. Shout out to Margaret for having it and hosting it and inviting me and everything. And then the last thing I'll say is I wrote 2 more pages. So
yay! way.
Making it happen. I'm so close to the end. I really want to finish it just so I can send it to all these people I just told about the project on Saturday, because I told everyone about it. So I really want to finish it so I can start sharing it with people. And, you know, but now I'm all nervous. I'm like, oh my God, like these people, are they going to hate this insane, like grindhouse exploitation, sci-fi horror craziness movie? Like, is this going to offend their, you know, artistic sensibilities, like these people who work on like cool elevated artistic projects? Or is this going to be like, are they going to dig it? You know? So now I want to make sure it's like really cool before I send anybody. But you know, I just have to let go. I think this movie is written for a very specific type of person. And yeah, I don't know.
That's good. Like, that's a good thing, by the way.
It's like, yeah, if you like Rick and Morty and you like Men in Black, and if you like 80s, like all the movies that go on Joe Bob's show, then you're going to like this. Like Night of the Creeps, like those kinds of movies, like, you know, A Return of the Night of the Living Dead or whatever that one is with the tar monster, like all that stuff. Like if that's your jam, this is going to do it for you. But if it's not, you're going to be like, what in the F is this shit? This is too much. But with that, another thing that isn't too much is to check out our Patreon page. Go to www.patreon.com/MMIHpodcast to check out our show and, you know, give what you can to keep this thing going. We have a lot of wonderful patrons who support us. So thank you all for helping us out. And we're still trying to figure out like what we can do to, you know, give you guys a little extra bonus now that we're not doing a back catalog anymore. I'm sure we'll think of something soon. Make sure to give us a review on iTunes. That helps us almost as much, if not more, than being a patron of the show. So if you want to write us a review or leave us a rating, that'll really, really do a lot for the show and help more people find us. But without any further delay, here is our chat with Travis Burgess.
Hi, Travis. Give us the elevator pitch for Hayseed.
Hi, Liz. Happy to be here. Hayseed is a whodunit murder mystery in a small town where a reverend is found murdered, we come to find out, in the baptismal pool of his small rural church. A insurance investigator comes into the town and starts interviewing people and finds out that there's possibly more to it than what he originally thought. So he teams up with the church secretary, and they encounter a web of lies, and it gets pretty dark pretty quickly. So it's a fun movie, though. It's a movie that's, you know, intended for all ages. Shot it with that intention. We filmed it in my hometown, which was a lot of fun going back to Eden Rapids, Michigan to make the movie. And yeah, it's quirky, it's fun, but it's also, you know, a good whodunit. So it's got all those elements.
How many days did you shoot the film?
Well, we did shoot this during COVID. Generally, when I was talking about this movie, when we were doing the theatrical release, I tried to avoid talking about COVID, but you know, that is part of it. And it's part of what made it so challenging to make this movie. So we shot for 30 days. We didn't shoot for all 30 days because we had to start and stop a few times because of some safety issues on set because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
With that 30 days, can you tell us what your rough budget was?
Less than $500,000.
Can you give us a bottom range as well, if you feel comfortable?
Wow.
I just wanted to give you like a big hug in that moment. I felt like this rush of love for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for saying the number.
I have so many questions. My God almighty. Where did the idea come from? Like, how did you decide to make this the movie you made for your feature?
Yeah, so I didn't intend to make this movie. I do consider myself a writer first and foremost, and I am constantly writing. And when I finish a project or get it close to a point where I think that it's, you know, shareable or acceptable, I dive right into the next. And I'd never written anything like Hayseed before. I'd never tried to write a whodunit. And I thought it was a challenge. Boy, did I find out it was a challenge. I needed a spreadsheet to track all the storylines, and that came in very handy. But yeah, so I wrote it and I sent it to my producer, Michael Brown. And he said, love it. We should make this. I said, it's a terrible idea. You know, here we are 2 years later. So yeah, Mike was really the gasoline on the fire there. He really wanted to make it. And he pitched me on the idea of going to my hometown. Mike and I grew up in Eden Rapids, Michigan, and shooting it there and really stretching the budget. Yeah, it was you know, it's a heartbreaking experience at times, but it's also a lot of fun to make. And I'm very proud of it. And I think most of the people that worked on it are very proud of it too.
I made note of your spreadsheet and our outline over here, just so you know, I remember that.
We can talk about that.
When you came up with the idea, when was that? So we could just get a sense of the timeline of inspiration striking, production starts, release.
Yeah. So this was 2020, May of 2020. I decided that I was going to write Hayseed. I started with the title first, working backwards. It's not a great, great move, but I liked it. It was inspiring and it came quickly. Generally, I'll create an outline and rough that outline and keep adding to it. And I'll get to about 60 pages before I even dive into the dialogue. Hayseed did not come out that way. I wrote it in 5 weeks and I probably should have taken more time to write it. You know, we could have saved some money probably in production if I was a little bit more conscientious of that. But it came quickly and I liked it a lot. And I shared it with Mike, like I said, and he said, let's make this. So, you know, I dragged my feet a little bit. I talked to my wife about it and made sure she was happy and comfortable with me making a movie, because she's been around the block and knows what that means and how long that takes and the amount of effort. She was completely supportive and I'm so thankful for that. But so we decided we need to raise money for this. And you know, I talked to a few people. Actually, I think I talked to Liz about this way back then. And we found that WeFunder was an option. Jim Cummings had used it to raise money for the beta test. And someone else we're close with that I know used WeFunder as well. And so, yeah, I did a little research about that. And getting that off the ground wasn't the easiest thing. But we went live in, I think it was December 20th, 2020. And we had raised the whole budget by, it's about 7 months, I think, before so what it took to raise the budget. So
going through the COVID.
Yeah, production started.
No.
Yeah, production started in October of 2021, and we finished. I made a promise I'd be back for Halloween, so we got back in time for Halloween.
Alric and I talked about that on the show, like how important Halloween is for parents.
Yeah.
Like that's like the most important day of the year to me. Sorry, it's Alric's question. I just had to weigh in about Halloween.
It's a close second to Christmas, that's for sure.
It's like a whole new world now that I have children. It's like, yeah, the things you don't want to compromise on. It's like Halloween. It was not what I was expecting. Christmas, I knew. Halloween, I was like, oh, yeah. I definitely don't want to be doing anything on Halloween. Okay, if you could change one thing about the film in any ways, this could be like the final product, story, whatever, or it could be like the way the movie was made, stuff on set, before you made the movie, after you made the movie. What is like one thing about the whole process of making your film that you would change?
Well, you know, this was my first movie I directed. So I'd produced a few things before and I'd been on a lot of sets, and I through osmosis kind of learned how to run a set and how to communicate with actors. And I hope that I have a chance to make another film. I'm working on that right now. You know, these things come and go, but I did learn a lot in the process of making Hayseed. And I learned, you know, how to manage, you know, at one point, I think we had 75 people on set. I mean, there were some large days with large number of people and just managing all that. So I guess the one thing I would change, I would like to go into the next movie with the core team that we had on Hayseed. We were kind of finding out who those people were when we were making Hayseed, because we were taking, you know, a lot of favors. A lot of the people that were brought on were locals. And so I didn't really have a clear team going into it. And that would have really helped in like a pre-production setting. And rehearsals, that was another thing. It's just, I guess, being more prepared going into it and just having that team assembled where we can get a lot of these details ironed out before we show up to set. I don't know if any of that made sense, but I'm trying
it does.
Just speak from the heart here. It really, really needed to be as tight as possible. We had a huge script. It was 136 pages. I think there was 225 scenes.
Wow.
And, you know, we made it in 3.5 weeks. So we didn't have a whole lot of time, and people were flying in and literally working that day and then, you know, flying out the next day. So, and then you throw a pandemic into the mix and it really made it hectic. So yeah, the next time around, just more prep time, budget for rehearsals. The actors would love that. But we were so lucky with Pacey that everyone was just such a pro and they came off book and ready to work. But I think we could have found our cadence a little quicker had we had that rehearsal time and that prep time built in.
I want to go back to you deciding to make this movie.
Yeah.
And this may be a very squishy question, so take it for, you know, however you'd like. But how did you know? You know, we always talk about, like, how do you know you found the right partner? How do you know you found what you want to do with your life? How did you know this script, this movie, not the pragmatic reasons, but like the squishy, like instinctual reasons?
Squishy. Yeah. So I have always wanted to make movies as long as I can remember. I had a one of those large VHS camcorders that my dad had bought when I was younger. And I put that to work when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. I've always liked making movies. I worked for a production company, Coalition Films, under Joseph Costello for 9 years. So I learned a lot from Joe and his partners. And I don't know, I just, when it came to Hayseed, it felt like something that I could do. I'd written a script just before Hayseed that would have required a huge budget, you know, and I wrote several like genre-based things that I wanted to shoot in New York, and that didn't seem practical either, just because of the costs. And I guess when it came down to it, I didn't really know that Hayseed was the movie to make. It was Michael, my producer partner, that he really pushed me and made me believe that it was the movie to make. So, you know, and we made some really good partnerships along the way. The guys at Dynamic, Vic Lord, my executive producers, Ted Rhodes and Jorge Manuel and Octavius Prince, they were really supportive of the project. And, you know, that finding that first money in was really kind of the key to all unlocking all of this, because, you know, you're pitching something that's like conceptual. It's hey, I want to make this thing and I have nothing to back it up to show you that I can make this. And so when Ted was like, I'll be your first money in, that changed everything. So now we have some money and you can take that and it starts to snowball after that. So, but the scary thing was, I mentioned WeFunder, to start one of these WeFunder campaigns or one of these, you know, like Seed and Spark or whatever, but you have to make an announcement that I'm making this thing, and you have to make a video of yourself, and you have to put it up on the internet, and then you have to send it to every person you've ever met in your entire life. And it can be scary, and it was scary, but that's kind of like jumping in the deep end. And so, like, once I did that, now I had to make the movie. I didn't have an option. I couldn't go to Thanksgiving that year if I didn't make the movie. So yeah. I guess I answered your question with a squishy answer, but it's always been the case. It's always what I wanted to do, and I'm really, really lucky to have been able to do it at least once.
So the money is a lot of money to raise, first off. So congratulations. Like, that's a huge amount of money. I don't think Liz and I have either raised that much money before. I think the question is, like, that first amount of money, how much was it? Like, was it like a quarter of it? Was it like less than that?
Not even close. And that's like, you know, if you want to get into, like, I'll speak candidly, it was a lot of small amounts. Mm-hmm. The first money when I talked to Ted was, I don't know, bad at math here, 10% of the budget, with the hope that I could go back to him a second time. You know, if I end up raising like 75% of it, maybe I could go back and talk to him. We used WeFunder, which I would say might not be the best choice for a movie of this size, because of the accounting elements after the fact. Mm. When you have 90 investors, it gets really, really complicated to pay 90 people back. And it costs something, you know, for every individual. So I think that's something I would also change for the next film that I'm working on. Having kind of going back to the people who believed in me the first time, but also trying to find like larger investments just to simplify the accounting afterward. You know, we're using a CAMA and we're using all the, you know, the CPA, but
those things cost money.
Yes. It's all very expensive. Then. Yeah. So that was another, to answer your original question, what would I change?
Yeah. But it's like kind of crazy that, yeah. Well, okay. So sorry. So just for a quick follow-up. So would you not do any kind of crowdfunding of any kind next time, or would you just not use WeFunder?
No, nothing against WeFunder. The product was solid, and their staff was very helpful and supportive. You know, WeFunder does take a large percentage too. I don't know, I can't remember what it was, but it ended up being like $15,000 or something at the end of the day, because we raised quite a bit through WeFunder. It does give you a platform where you seem a little more legitimate, so I'm appreciative of that, and I understand the necessity for that. But the movie I'm planning on making next, I built in for the raise, a Seed and Spark or like a Kickstarter-esque raise, in addition to the budget that I'm trying to raise. So, and mainly because I need to make sure we are in a good position when we go to market the thing. and we have the money to market the movie properly. That's something that I'm learning in real time, what that costs and what, you know, what you tend to like ignore the what happens after the movie when you're so focused on trying to make the movie. And I just want to ensure that I have a runway post movie.
Yeah.
Just to get it out to people. Yeah. So all that's to say, yes, I would use crowdfunding. I think it's very helpful. But I also, this time around, would like to maybe raise the money from like five individuals instead of 95 individuals.
You mentioned that you refined your team through the process of making Hayseed, but you also came in with what sounds like an incredibly strong professional partnership with Michael Brown. And have you noticed motifs or characteristics in common with the people who kind of stayed the course with you and became part of that core team? Like, how did you refine those people?
So I met Victor Lord on set day one of Hayseed. I didn't know him before. He was a hire from Michael. Vic's in LA. I'm in New York. So we've never worked on projects together. So he came on as an AD and he was amazing. He was the best AD I've ever worked with. So organized, so professional. You know, we had Jack Fallahy, who, you know, he did six seasons of How to Get Away with Murder, and he'd been on some of the biggest sets and sound stages. And he came over to me and said, "That guy Vic is really good." And I said, "I'm not going to tell him until after the shoot because I don't want his head to get too big. But yeah, he's really good." And so after the movie, Vic reached out to me and said, "Hey, if you're interested, I would like to be a producer on Hayseed." And so this guy was in the trenches with me. We were like sharing a house together in Michigan, seeing each other at our most vulnerable on set and offset. I like to say how he saw how the sausage was made and he still wanted to come back and be a producer on it and see this thing through the finish line, see it through post-production. We had a Wednesday meeting every single day for 2 years after the movie, where we would get on and we talk, and there were meeting minutes, and he was so buttoned up, and I would do anything for that guy. He's incredible. So when I say we kind of found the team, it's like he stepped up in a huge way after we already started shooting the movie, and he helped raise money after the movie was in the can for post, and he really, really helped a lot. And he brought with him a whole team with Brett Miller and Adam Bussell. And yeah, it just really, really felt like it was growing, and they're doing some good things too. And I hope to be involved with the next project they make. Yeah. And you know, you kind of find out who's who on a set, you know, you're in a foxhole, in fact. And when it gets shaky, you want to make sure you're surrounded by the right people. We had Eric Cotty, who originally I was considering as an actor for the movie, and I became close with Eric, and he's in New York. So we would meet out, have dinner, whatever. And it occurred to me that he's the guy that I need in the producer team. So he kind of, I just offered him the job. I'm like, "Will you produce Hayseed?" And he was very reluctant, but I'm so thankful to have him, because he, again, was one of those guys that every single day he would check in, or he would always pick up my phone calls. You know, that's so important when you're needing something or wanting advice on something. Eric was always the one that would pick up the phone calls and kind of walk me through it. So yeah, it just kind of organically happened. It wasn't like I had all these people from previous projects that I'd worked on coming back to help me. Mike, I've known since I was a child. So known him, I think, since the second grade. So Mike and I go way back. We have a shorthand. We have very similar interests. He was a given, you know. Mike was going to be there.
So what was it about what Mike said to you about Hayseed that convinced you to make the movie? Because, like, you know, you talked about earlier how you were like a writer first, you know, and you never really thought about yourself as a director, and you never really directed anything really before this, it seems, based off your IMDb at least. So like going from 0 to 60 with like a $500,000 feature, that's a huge, huge step.
Yeah.
So what did Mike say to you to get you the fire in your belly and, like, you know, get you to, you know, want to make this movie?
It probably didn't take as much as I'm letting on. I really wanted to do it, but I had my reservations, and mainly because I know how hard it is. You know, making movies is hard, as you guys very well know. So the last movie I worked on was The Preppy Connection, and I was a co-producer on that, and that consumed like 7 years of my life. So I know how long these things take. And we had, my wife and I have two boys, they're twins, and they were 5 months old. And so I'm sitting across the dinner table, I'm like, okay, I think I want to make this movie. Is that okay? And I got permission from my wife and she agreed, but it kind of felt like now or never at that, at that moment. It felt like if I don't do this, my boys are going to get fat, big, very fast. And I'm not going to be able to do this again. You know, I'm not going to have this window of opportunity. So Mike was there and, you know, that means a lot to me, the loyalty of collaborators and friends. And, you know, he kept pestering me and eventually I said, let's do it. So yeah, I'm just kind of reflecting on those days. I haven't thought about them in a very long time. So thanks for asking that question, but
just to add, like, I feel very similarly to you, to how you did, but right now, because my kid is 5 months, my second child is 5 months old,
yeah.
And I feel very much like it's now or never for this new feature I'm on. So what you're saying is like bringing that fire out of me too. It's reminding me like, well, shit, we got to get it done. That was my selfish admission. Now I have a question that's completely unrelated. I wanted to talk about casting.
Sure.
Because I hear the budget, but I also hear your genre. The movie's very good. People should know that. And I think you cast somewhat recognizable faces, some newcomers, like there's kind of a wide variety from my understanding of how you cast. But was there a philosophy? Because both Arik and I made our features in a very, very specific budget range, mm-hmm. You know, around 75 to 100K, maybe a little bit more sometimes. But, you know, we can't afford Brad Pitt, right? But I also understand that there's an instinct to cast familiar faces because of what you might want for distribution or for marketing, or maybe as a director, you want to work with actors who have been on a lot of sets. So I guess I'm just curious, what was underneath the philosophy of casting this film at this budget range?
Yeah, well, I guess I wanted the best actors I could get. I mean, I needed the best actors I could get just to make my job easier. You know, I thought, I guess maybe the original thesis was we're going to hire theater actors because I need someone who can, I don't know how they do it. It's this incredible talent that these actors have where they can look at a page, they can memorize the page, they can say the words and then forget it immediately. And then it's this, I don't know if it's taught. I don't know if it's instinctual. I have no idea, but it's incredible. And like I said, it was a very long script. It was 136 pages. And for example, Bill Sage had to, I think the end of the movie is a 10 page
one take, right? Like
effectively.
But, yeah.
It's amazing that he was game for that. And yeah, so when it came to casting, I have a friend, Sigdi Miguel and Steven Vincent. They have a company called SU Casting. They cast the movie They cast the movie The Preppy Connection. And that's when I got to know them. And I worked in the same building as them. And so, you know, it was more of like friends, you know. And so he gave me a discount. I came to him and he's cast like 100 plus movies, and he's, you know, he did Clifford the Big Red Dog recently, and like, you know, you know, he's been around and he's very good at what he does. And so I went to Sig and I said, Sig, I want to make a movie and I need to attach the biggest actor you can muster for this budget level. And he goes, call me when you have money. I'm like, okay. In other words, Sig wasn't interested in, you know, hawking my script around without some, you know, money attached to it. So, and it wasn't even for him. It was just to know that the project was going to actually happen, right? And not just for him, but for me. Like, he doesn't want to embarrass me, and I don't want to embarrass him, and vice versa. So anyway, I get Sig on board, Sig and Steve, and they come up with all these dream lists. I mean, it's crazy, some of the names that were on this. And like, as like a aspiring at that moment filmmaker, you know, I was very excited. Gosh, some of these names, I won't mention any of them because they aren't in the movie, but just really gets your brain going, like, oh, this is what the movie could be. And, you know, then you start facing the realities of casting and, you know, schedules and how much money will they be able to work for? Would they be willing to fly to Michigan, you know, for example? And so we had kind of a fluid casting process. It was kind of happening up until the day we shot. I mean, it was pretty scary there for a minute. We had some stipulations about, like, you know, being vaccinated, for example, and that immediately crossed off some names. And
wow.
Yeah, it was probably the most exciting and stressful part of making the movie, the casting process. I think I talked to you when we were in LA about you know, we didn't have a room where people were coming in and auditioning. We were doing it all over the internet. And so I had my cell phone in my hand, sitting up in bed. My wife was asleep next to me. And I'm just watching all these videos of people auditioning. And we had 400 taped auditions for Hazy. And that's not even counting the offers that we went out with. I mean, it was, and I wanted to, you know, watch every single one of them. It was important for me to do that. And someone's taken time out of the day to tape my words that I scribbled down. You know, I owe them that. So there was a lot of really interesting people that I saw, and some like faces, I couldn't believe it. Probably shouldn't even say this, but like, anyway, someone who I love very much in my favorite movie ever auditioned, and I could not believe it. And I had to say no, because he wasn't right. But I just, one of those moments where you're seeing someone who you adore reading something you wrote, and it was so cool.
Wow.
Yeah, I got
had to say no. That's crazy.
Yeah, but I'm really happy with who we got for the role. So Nolan North plays kind of the heavy in our movie, and he was so charismatic and just so much fun to be around on set. And when you have those nights where it's 3 a.m. and it's raining and you can't shoot anything and everyone's just like huddled and grumpy, he was holding court and making people laugh and really brought a good energy to the set.
Wow.
So it all worked out in the end, but that was certainly the most stressful portion for me, was casting. But we got really lucky. I mean, we set ourselves up for success, but Sig and Steve and all the producers that helped weigh in on, you know, who's right and who's not. And yeah, I'm really proud of our cast.
I have to ask a quick follow-up question to this. Like, so this guy that you love, or woman, I don't know, whoever it was, was there another role that you thought they could have fit into that you could be like, oh, wait, well, this isn't right, but you would be perfect for this, but did that just not exist? Or did you not feel comfortable doing that? Like, I would be like, if it was somebody that I thought that strongly of, I would be like, I'm getting this person in the movie. I don't care how, like, they're going to fit, you know?
Yeah, I guess we had, at that moment, we had most of the cast locked up, and it's fine.
No, that makes sense.
He's in The Pope of Greenwich Village, and that's one of my top five favorite movies. So,
Oh.
Is it who I think it is?
Who we think it is. It is. Man.
Oh man, that would be hard. It'd be so hard.
Yeah,
but so, anyway. Also kind of easy, Travis. Also kind of easy to say no.
I've heard some stories.
You made the right decision.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't need any complications further than what I already had on paper. So, but yeah, the cast was really, really just, I mean, look, we're making a small movie. I have very, very little money to throw around for accommodations or even like, I mean, Catherine Morris is in our movie. She is just a lovely, lovely human. I just so thankful to have her in the movie. But even she was like, you can do better with Crafty. Come on. What is this? Like, so they were all game, and the situation, you know, is what it is. But we shot in Michigan, in a very small town, south of Lansing, about 3,000 people. And just like the practical things that you don't think about when you're dreaming about making this movie at home, it's like, oh, you can't get food after 8 o'clock because all the restaurants are closed. How are you going to shoot overnight? Like, so we had to get pretty creative, and I don't even know where I was going with that. But all this was to say, I guess, that the crew really just kind of rolled with the punches, and like, they were all making the same movie. We're making an indie movie, and we were having a fun time doing it. And I'm very lucky.
So that wasn't my real question. I have a real question. So you mentioned before in the opening that like there was some moments of the making the film that were heartbreaking. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what was the really heartbreaking, tough stuff that you had to deal with on set while making this movie?
Well, look, like I said, we have twin boys, and I had to leave them. And I did not realize how difficult that was going to be to get in the cab to go to the airport that morning. Like, see you in like 5 weeks.
Ugh,
and it's like it felt at that moment like such a important time in their life. Like, you know, you're seeing like progressions in their development, and you're like, oh, I'm going to miss out on all these cool memories. And I mean, looking back, like they were kind of like blobs, and they just kind of like laid around. And so it was really a good time to go make a movie. I don't think I could do that today, now that they're 2.5. Like, I couldn't do that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So the next movie I'm making here, so I can like sleep in my own bed and see them every day. And like, that's the plan at least. But yeah, you know, and then just like the actual making of the movie was quite fun. It was, I just love being on set. It's my favorite place to be. And I don't care if it's 3 o'clock in the morning raining and everyone's grumpy. Like I'm happy to be there. Think of all the other places I could be. Then you realize how awesome it is that you get to be on a film set. But to make matters worse, I got a call in the third week of shooting. I was talking to my wife every morning, and on the drive in, she was up with the boys at 5:30 in the morning. So it worked out pretty well that I could call her. I noticed something in her voice, and I pressed her. She had been diagnosed with cancer while I was away.
Oh my God.
I didn't know this.
It was, how do you go to work then? But you have 45 people who are waiting on set when you arrive, and you have to pretend like nothing has happened. And I had to tell somebody. So I told my cinematographer, Brad Porter. I'm like, man, you're just going to have to like carry a little weight today, because I'm kind of checked out emotionally. And,
yeah,
you know, we maybe should have told a producer in hindsight, because Brad really took advantage and overshot a scene that we could move on maybe. But look, you give a camera guy an opportunity, they're going to take it. So, it was wonderful, and he did a great job. But look, it was really, really hard. So I knew that when I was flying home and I had the hard drives, you know, at my feet and on the plane, and I was thinking about what I was going home to, I had that realization that, you know, if I can make a movie under these circumstances with COVID, missing my children, my wife's diagnosis, and not to mention all the other, you know, hardships while making an indie movie, the next one's going to be a lot easier. And mm-hmm. I'm going to have the confidence going into the next one, knowing that, look, if I can make a movie under these circumstances, the next one's going to be a dream. My wife is cancer-free.
Yay.
5 surgeries later and a year and a half of doctor's offices, and the boys are extremely healthy and active and crazy. So my life's great. I'm doing very well, but it's never easy. And when you're like quarterbacking the set, you know, to have that on your shoulders, it's a lot to like focus on trying to make a imaginary scene with like actors talking, you know, like it's like really difficult to like, but it was important to me, and it was important to like be there for everybody. And, you know, you have a lot of people counting on you, not to mention the money issues. But yeah, it's just, making movies hard.
But it also puts things in perspective. You know, I mean, like, I'm sure that was like a very interesting intellectual paradigm to balance, where you're like, what is important to me in this moment, right? Yeah. And kind of battling that.
If I have nothing, Liz, I have wherewithal. And so I just got through it.
I wanted to ask another question, but it is not topically similar to what we're talking about. Arik, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think, can I cover it? Crazy thing that you went through. But yeah, I mean, it must give you like the strength, like, oh yeah, I did it under that. Next time in my hometown or where I'm living, it's going to be great. No problem.
It better be easier, or else like karma, you got to like kick their ass somehow. That would be so shitty. I'd be like, I'd like, you go on. All right.
The one question I had was, why didn't you tell your friend Mike? Did you not want to put that on him? Because like, you've known him for so long. Like that, to me, when you were saying I told one person, I was like, oh, it must have been Mike. But
yeah,
was it the cinematographer?
Yeah, because I really didn't want any distractions. And we were all working really, really hard. And that's kind of how I operate anyway. I did tell everybody eventually when I knew it wasn't going to affect anything. And I didn't want anyone looking at me I just didn't want to change the dynamic that was working so well in those moments. And it just, I didn't need anyone thinking depressing thoughts when we're trying to make a fun movie.
Yeah.
I want to fast forward, and this is kind of a less interesting question, but it's really interesting to me. So that's why I'm asking it, Travis. You get to distribution.
Mm-hmm.
You are a unicorn. You are an indie film with a theatrical release in 2024, right?
Yeah.
I just wanted you to talk about that. Like the fact that you did a theatrical, and then like, I know a little bit of the groundwork that you and your team did in terms of marketing and promotion of the film. And I witnessed it too. So tell us a little bit about that and our left turn over here.
Yeah. So when it came to selling the movie, I always knew we would sell the movie. There was no hesitation. I thought that was going to happen. It took a lot longer than I realized. We had an offer with an attached MG right out the gate. And so that was inspiring. Our producers thought that we could do better. So, you know, we went out and we hired a producer's rep, and they hired a producer's rep, and we went out to 25 companies and got 9 offers back. None were as good as the first. But at this point, we'd spent 6 months trying to find a better deal. And in that time, the offer was we lost it.
Wow.
But I really think it's for the best, because we found a good partnership with Good Deed Entertainment. Some of the other companies we talked to were releasing like a huge slate, you know, 150 movies a year or whatever they do. And I just really thought that we'd kind of be lost, small fish in a big pond sort of situation. So we found these guys in Ohio in Good Deed. And I thought, you know, we shot the movie in the Midwest. These guys are based in the Midwest. Let's have some synergy here. And I was really, really kind of comforted by their team when we first met and did the interview. And yeah, so I knew that basically all the companies we were talking to were effectively the same. There really is no budget to market your movie, even though that's what they're supposed to do. And especially when you're talking about a 10-year term, whatever money you think you're going to get for the marketing budget is probably most of it spent in the first couple months. And then the rest of it is like sprinkled across 10 years. So it's really not that much money. So, you know, going into the next film, we have to have money for marketing, and we have to kind of create our own marketing strategy, because it's the only way to do it. But I was really, really lucky with Dynamic, the company in LA, Dynamic Creative and Dynamic Films. That's Adam Bussell. That's Vic Lord. That's Brett Miller. They have like an amazing team of guys that were willing to do a lot of work for us. And they cut the trailer. They cut all the stuff you would see online, like the character clips. And they generated like 30 videos for us. Pro bono, by the way. You know, like none of this cost us anything. We were all in it together. And, you know, I was really pushing all like the online things with Instagram and Facebook and all those things that you have to do. But I got lost in that.
Wait, quick follow up while you find yourself.
Yeah.
The quick follow up is, do you have any quick kind of takeaway personally why there was such demand for your film when, I mean, I don't believe it's a meritocracy. So I don't think demand is a reflection of the quality of the film. Your film is great. In an ideal world, it would be a meritocracy. Could it be the genre that helped you out all along? Or do you have a reason for why you received so much interest?
I mean, one of the reasons I decided to make Hayseed, I mean, beyond, you know, Mike telling me we should do it, and one of the reasons I wanted to write it was the success of Knives Out, a movie that I really, really liked. I walked out of the movie theater when I saw it, and I'm like, how did he make this? It's amazing. And hence the spreadsheet, which we might talk about. So I had to figure that out, and like, for myself. And since that movie came out, there's just been a slew of these whodunits that have come out. And I was hoping to kind of fit right in to that grouping of this resurgence of whodunits. I always loved Columbo, and there's reasons that I wanted to write it. But, you know, I was just trying to make a movie that people would want to watch, and make a movie that is lighthearted, and, you know, you can spend an hour and a half watching it and go about your day, and it's not too heavy, and it's, you know, my kids can watch it. Like it that was the intention, like just to make a fun little movie for entertainment's sake. But to get back to the theatrical, yeah. So when we met with Good Deed, they initially said, you're not doing a theatrical, because everyone said that, because that's just the way it is, right? In 2023. And Gravitas said that they would do 2-city release. That was one distributor we did talk to. But then the strikes happened, and there was, you know, a window of opportunity. I thought there just weren't that many titles in theaters, and I thought that was an opening for us. So if we were going to do this right, we had to work with SAG, and I called our SAG rep, and how do I get this interim agreement? How do I work with you guys to like do this the right way, and, you know, within the ethics and the parameters that SAG had. And so we worked really hard for 2 months, and we got the interim agreement. And after that, I went to Good Deed. I'm like, hey, I really think this is an opportunity. We can screen this movie. I think we did, I can't remember what it was now, many cities. And I'm gonna do it the right way through SAG. And they're like, okay, come back to us when you get this interim agreement, because there's no way this is gonna work. And there was even talk about, they gave me this release date, which was November 21st. And I was so stoked about that date. I was really happy because I'm like, we're gonna hit streamers at Thanksgiving. So people are home, people can watch our movie. And when the strikes were happening, they were kicking around the idea of like, well, maybe we'll just move your movie to January. And I'm like, no, please, please do not do that. Please do not do that. So we had like an emergency meeting. I presented the idea of like doing this like little, more or less was just for promoting the movie, putting the movie in select theaters. And we sold out every screening. Well, besides the LA screenings, which is, LA is a really tough town, I guess, because—
But LA was packed. I was so shocked how full that theater was. You did great.
When you're coming off of like a 250 seat theater that's full, like it really was.
For LA, it was very successful, I will tell you. Yeah.
But LA was a lot of fun, and that was a good time to like meet up with everybody again and see the producers and the actors. But anyway, all that's to say, I had to make a case, and we pitched them hard, and Good Deed, I give them a lot of credit. They agreed to do it. And so we did like a little road trip where I did a screening in Detroit, and the next day Ann Arbor, and the next day Lansing, and Grand Rapids the next day, and we had some screenings here in New York and in California, and that was a whirlwind. It was all in like a 2-week period. It was very condensed and very exciting. But yeah, we got the word out. So I think it worked out for everybody. It didn't cost a whole lot. We had a friend that their, I don't know, some relative of theirs owns a theater chain in Michigan. So they did us a solid. Yeah, I think we had two screenings through them. And we basically just did it ourselves. I mean, we had a booking agent, but I mean, she was very helpful, but we kind of had to create the whole marketing plan on our own from scratch. And a lot of thanks goes to Vic Lord for being as thorough and precise with his planning. But yeah, they were really cool. Good Deed was really cool, and they let us do it. It's something special to see your movie in a theater with people. You know, I've seen this movie way too many times. I still enjoy like just kind of sitting in the back for the first like 15 minutes and seeing people react to it or hearing them laugh. I usually sit outside the door, and it did get laughs. And there's something about seeing a movie in a theater that's, you know, that communal element where the laughter is infectious and the jokes land a little harder. And I guess that's why you do it. So yeah, we're really lucky to have that opportunity and show it, especially in my home state. We knew it would go over well in all those towns, and people came out. They came out to the movies, which was cool.
So we only have 2 minutes left. I want to ask one more question, Liz. Is that okay? And then we just do like a shorter version.
I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to leave in 2 minutes. You do whatever you want. I'm just going to disappear.
Okay. All right. Well, I just want to ask, like, you know, you're 2 months out from your release. Mm-hmm. It's a two-part question. One is, how do you feel about it now? Like, what's your emotional state? And second part is, do you see a road to recoupment for your movie? Or is that seeming like, what's that look like?
Yeah, I think we will recoup. Wow. I'm confident that we'll recoup. So how do I feel about it? I guess I felt the best about the movie right before it was released on November 20th, the eve of. I was feeling pretty good. We had a very aggressive online marketing strategy that we pulled off, and I felt that was successful. Got a lot of eyeballs on our trailer. People were talking about it. We got some reviews, and all of the reviews have been positive, which is just, I'm really still waiting for that shoe to drop and like someone to come like really slag on the movie. But we're so puffed up because we have these great reviews. I don't think anyone can hurt us, you know, at this point. It feels pretty good. So anyway, all that's to say, 2 months out, I feel like, speaking candidly, I kind of feel like it never happened. It kind of feels like a dream a little bit. It doesn't feel like the posters on my wall, you know, you can look at it on Instagram or on, you can watch it on Amazon and Apple TV right now. You can go and check out the movie, but it's like someone else made that movie. It really feels like a different version of me. Yeah, it's very strange. I'm like so focused on the next thing, and I'm proud of Hayseed, but it really feels like it was all a dream. You know, it's a very strange thing. Yeah. So it was a two-part question. What was the second part?
Oh, that was it. How you're feeling in the road to recoupment? You answered.
Oh, the road to recoupment. Yeah. We had pretty good numbers our first weekend, and nice. I've been checking in with Good Deed. Marco at Good Deed has been very, very responsive, taking my calls and answering my emails, sending me snapshots of how it's performing. And it's been very steady every week since its release. Yeah, they seem inspired, and they seem like they're happy with the way it's performing currently. But that's only in rentals. So the next thing it will be the SVOD platforms. They're right now pitching to all, you know, I'm not going to name any of them, but like all the SVODs, the subscription-based video on demand.
Nice. Awesome.
And then, you know, we're going to be on Tubi soon. And I love Tubi. And that's going to happen whenever the SVOD run stops. So yeah, I really, you know, like these things take time to recoup, obviously. The last movie I worked on, The Preppy Connection, it took like 5 years, but that was a much bigger film.
Nice.
Than Hayseed. So yeah, I think we made a movie that people like. There's been a great word of mouth. I actually got a call yesterday from my doctor, my primary physician. So I answered it. I was a bit nervous and, you know, taking a call from a doctor. I don't know what he's going to say. And he goes, "Hey, I just wanted to call you and tell you I watched your movie. I loved it." And so
that's nice.
Thanks, doc. So yeah, the word's getting out. And you know, yeah, I can't say enough about the cast. Bill Sage was remarkable in the movie. Jack Fallahy, Ismenia Mendez, Amy Hardgraves, Nolan North, Caitlin Carver, Eric Cotty, they're all so good in this movie. Kyle Jurassic, we were so lucky to. I wrote the part for him, really not knowing his comic ability, and he just knocks it out of the park. He's so funny in this movie. But yeah, we should see a recoupment, but it's hard to tell how soon.
Nice. All right, well, we're going to get to our final questions here. I'm just going to skip to my favorites. What's Ooh. The best filmmaking advice you've ever received?
I didn't receive it, but Joe Costello, a mentor of mine, he had the opportunity to talk to Milos Forman when he was making his first movie. And Milos told him I guess he was quite nervous, Joe, and he wanted to rush through something. And he was concerned about all the things that were happening on set and like making sure everything was moving just so. And Milos just quietly said to him, "They will wait." And I thought about that when making Hayseed. What I think Milos was trying to say is, you know, take the time that you need to make something. You've done the work of getting everyone there on set. You've done the work of hiring these people and finding the money and flying them in. And if you need to take one more take, or if you need to take one more breath before moving, they will wait. It's simple, but it's effective. And why bother doing all of this work, creating the circus, if you're just going to rush through it and not do it right?
What's the worst filmmaking advice that you've ever received?
I don't know. I'm not answering that question. Yeah, worst filmmaking. Oh yeah, trying to raise money for post after you shot the movie. That's been floated to me before, and that seems like a terrible decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then it'll never come together. It's really, really.
But we all do it though.
We all do it, and I did it. I did it with Hayseed, you know, and it's. You find out what things truly cost. Not to say that we went over budget at all, but there's just some things we just didn't know. And even with our collective experience, like we just didn't realize some of the fees that we were going to have to pay and some of the things that we would have to do to get a movie to market. But yeah, it's really a lot easier to make someone excited about a movie, to raise money before it happens, than after. And so like showing someone a rough edit to inspire them to give you more money, it seems dangerous to me. I think that's bad advice.
Do you have a goal as a filmmaker?
Yeah, my goal is very simple. I don't need a whole lot. I just want to be able to continue doing what I'm doing. And just, it sounds silly to say out loud, but it's like, if I can keep making movies or trying to make movies and afford a lifestyle that way and raise my kids doing that, I'm happy. You know, I don't need to win an award. I don't need to make an excellent movie. I just want to be able to keep trying to do that. Because if it doesn't work out, like I could always go back to doing something else, but I'm pretty happy doing this. So I'm going to try to keep plugging away.
Nice. Last question. Is making movies hard?
Making movies is exceptionally hard. It is. I don't know why anyone does this. This was really nice, man. Thank you so much for allowing me on the show. And
of course,
you know, well, you know, I was completely unprepared for this conversation. So I'm just kind of, you know, shooting from the hip here. So thanks for bearing with me.
That's the way to go. Last thing, tell people where they can find the movie. Like, where should they go if they want to watch it, rent it?
Yeah, if you want to watch Hayseed, it is available on almost every streaming platform for a rental fee. You can watch Hayseed on Amazon. You can watch Hayseed on Apple iTunes, Apple TV, Vudu. It's out there right now. So it's getting a lot of nice things have been said about this movie. We got a lot of written reviews on Amazon, and I'm very thankful for that. But yeah, if you watch the movie on Amazon, that helps us a lot, helps us with the algorithm, and hopefully gets it out to more people, because making movies is hard and we hope that people get to see them. That's why we do this, I guess.
Liz, what do you remember about our talk with Travis?
Oh, I just remember he was super transparent. I have a pretty long history with this project. I alluded to it in the interview, probably. I met with them a while ago. They decided not to work with me to their own detriment. No, they did great. They did really great. They went the right pathway. But very kindly, they asked me to moderate their theatrical screening in North Hollywood several months ago when I had even less sleep and made even less sense. And I had a blast. And they had such a cool team that made this movie. And I was really, really impressed. So just warm feelings for Travis and his team and the movie Hayseed, and everyone should go see it. What about you?
Yeah, I just remember Travis seemed like a really great filmmaker, and I was really impressed with the amount of days that he got on his indie project, especially for his first feature, and that he was able to make a whodunit on such a short budget. And I watched the trailer. It looks really impressive. It looks like right up there with like any other, you know, indie film. And yeah, I mean, I feel like those kinds of movies are really hard to make because there's so much cast and so many things that need to be a part of it. And it was just really impressive.
Hey, well, what also is impressive is this week's Ask the Expert. It is my turn to ask Arik an expertise question. So what is this segment? Eric Toms, our producer, puts together a question that he thinks we would have something to relay regarding. So we are supposed experts and we're going to share our expert opinions. So Arik, how important are festival admissions or wins when it comes to getting distribution for my low budget indie film?
Extremely important. I feel like getting into festivals, it will change the trajectory of your film, depending on what festival you get into. Like, obviously, if you get into South by Southwest or Sundance or any of these big festivals, it can make a big difference for distribution and how people see the movie. For the genre side, like, I know movies that get into places like Fantasia do far better than movies that don't get into Fantasia as their premiere, you know, film festival. And I feel like once you get into good graces with like one of these bigger names, like the chances of getting into another big festival increase, it seems that, like, you know, just because you have word of mouth and like more people are seeing it within the world, you know. And I remember back with Strange Thing, I played a film festival in Indianapolis, and then I got into Toronto After Dark right after. And it's not entirely because of this one person, but like, I did submit to that to Toronto After Dark. And then one of the people who were there is connected to Toronto After Dark. And you put a good word in and people watched the movie and we got in, you know? And so it's like, these things matter in a big way. Yeah. I think it can totally change the trajectory of your movie depending on what festival you get into. I don't know how much the wins matter. I mean, the wins are nice. It's really great to talk about. Like, I won a bunch of awards for the alternate, you know, and I think it helped us. But like, honestly, if you're winning at a festival that no one's heard of, it's not going to help you more than, you know, if just getting into that festival because no one's heard of that festival. But if you win at a festival that people have heard of, then that definitely helps, you know. Like, I think our win at Phoenix helped us to some degree. I mean, it just also sounds cool, you know, but like, we won this big award in Italy and like, it was a huge to do. They gave me a big bottle of wine. I got like a gold ring. Like, David Lynch also won this award. It was like this really cool thing where all these like really famous filmmakers had also won the gold ring at this festival. But like, I think it was really cool. People in Italy think it's really cool. But like, people here are like, oh, gold ring, whatever, you know, who cares? But like, you know, to me, it was like a significant experience, but I don't think it didn't help our distribution in any way, you know? But like, if you win Sundance, yeah, that's going to help you for sure. What do you think, Liz?
Well, just to add on to what you're saying, when I rep and when I pitch films to distributors, if it is a film that doesn't have cast or it doesn't have genre associations, then I need something to hang my hat on, so to speak, when I pitch it. And so if it's not a top of the mid tier to a top tier film festival, then for me, it's a bunch of mid tier film festivals or pull quotes from some of the review coverage during the festival. But I think actually the most important when I'm pitching is a really good trailer. A really good trailer can bypass anything. And if you're a film that really doesn't have the budget to play the film festival game or doesn't have the time or energy, or you're just being rejected left and right and you applied to the wrong film festivals, putting together just a kick-ass trailer is more important. And I think that festivals are for emotional wins, unless they're the top tier film festivals like the South by, the Tribecas, the Sundance, the TIFFs, the Locarnos, you know, the Cannes, whatever. They're for an emotional experience and networking experience, foundation building. But in terms of distribution, I don't think they're that important. And we could get into it even more, but that's my big picture piece of advice. But you can always send us a question, comment, or suggestion to podcast@makingmoviesishard.com. If you like this show, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at MMIH Podcast, YouTube at Making Movies Is Hard Podcast. Thanks to Travis Burgess for coming on the show. Thanks to our editor, Jeff Freimuth, for doing the editing. Thanks to Robert Jones for handling all of our social media. And thanks to our producer, Eric Toms, for being awesome. Thanks to all of you for listening, and talk to you next week.